One of the things that that we want to do is kind of move rapidly through some information, and then hopefully, if we have time, and I don't know if we will or not, but we're going to shoot at having some time for you to ask questions, and everything that we don't know, we'll let you guys answer among yourselves, which means you better be prepared. Because one thing I guess you quickly understand once you get involved in a ministry like this is you quickly realize how much you don't know, and the further you go, the more you realize you don't know. But we have been involved in two situations of starting new BSUs. We went in 1975-76 to begin a BSU ministry at the University of Iowa, and we're there 4 years. And there had been a volunteer director and a student that had been working that field for a couple of years before we arrived. And the first time we had a group meeting of any kind, there were, I think, five of us, counting me and Joanne. And so we started from scratch on that campus, and at the end of the 4 years left with a group of about 40 students that were involved in BSU ministry. And then, as I shared the other night, went to East Lansing in the fall of 1982, and we'll be beginning our sixth year on campus at Michigan State, and began that ministry with a minus one, and God's really led, and we've grown, and God's been faithful to provide. So I just spent some time thinking through what were some of the principles that the Lord has taught us over the years of beginning two new BSU works that would be the kind of things that would be applicable in any kind of situation. So what I want us to do is I want to share just what those principles are. And I'd like for you, if you would, to write them down. And then what we're going to do is I've asked Ted Boyles, who began a BSU ministry at the University of Wisconsin in Madison a number of years ago, to come and just share with you the story of what he did. And then, once he finishes that, what we're going to do is we're going to take these principles and we're going to look through and we're going to share how well Ted applied some of those principles, what he did to apply those principles. This is Evaluate Ted night, see? He thought he was going to help out. He didn't know it was an evaluation. But what we're going to do is we're going to look at what Ted did to apply the principles. And then and go from there, okay? To help remember the principles, there we're going to talk about two PSs. You put a PS on the end of a letter. It has absolutely nothing to do with the principles, but it works. Yeah, it's a way to remember things. And so we'll talk about four principles that I think are really important. The first one is to have a personal vision. Is it Proverbs 16:18 that says, where there is no vision? No, it's Proverbs 29:18. It says, where there is no vision, the people perish. And so one of the things that is really crucial when we begin a work like that is that there must really be a personal vision. We've got to really understand what it is that God wants to accomplish in and through our lives in the ministry that He's called us to have. Because once you start something that way, you have a tremendous privilege, and that is that as the leader of a ministry like that, you have the opportunity, as God leads and provides, to impact the direction that ministry will take, probably for the length of time that there's a ministry there. We used the students a couple of years ago to begin a church in East Lansing, and I've had a couple of the pastors talk to me about how jealous they are because, you know, we can take the thing and we can look at problems that exist in church situations and so on, and try to structure things and organize things and pray through things and do things that will eliminate a lot of the problems, hopefully. It may create some others, but it will, eliminate some of the things that they'd love to be rid of. And they all talk about what a neat thing it is when you can start a church from scratch, because you can do it the way you really feel like God wants the church to be done. And that's true as we start BSU ministries. We have a tremendous opportunity to impact the direction that ministry will take for the life of the ministry. And so there, in order to do that, there needs to be a clear understanding of the vision that God really has, what He wants to do in and through your life. When we left to go, one of the verses that the Lord placed on my heart was Isaiah 58:10-12. Most of you are probably familiar with that. If you pour yourself out for the hungry and satisfy the desire of the afflicted, you know, then shall your light rise in the darkness and your gloom be as the noonday, and the Lord will guide you continually, satisfy your desire with good things, make your bones strong. You should be like a watered garden, like a spring of water whose waters fail not. Your ancient ruins shall be rebuilt. You shall raise up the foundations of many generations. And the thing that was on our heart as we went is, God, no matter what happens at the University of Iowa, at Michigan State University, what we really want to see happen is the foundations of many generations of believers to be raised up off of that campus. And it's kind of exciting every once in a while, you know, when you get kind of discouraged and depressed because, you know, certain things are going on or aren't going on or whatever, to be able to sit down and to be able to look at where God has placed people off of those two campuses, literally all around the world. And tonight, you know, we can say that we have a ministry in a lot of places of the world because God is working through the lives of students that have come up through that BSU ministry and have gone out now to different places around the world and are having an impact where they are. And as Gene Ward says, we get a little fraction of the action that takes place in those different locations. Because of the privilege the Lord's given us in having an impact on those students' lives. And you know, we've seen foundations of many generations of believers raised up. But one of the things that was key to that is to really know what it was that the Lord wanted to do, having a clear personal vision. A second thing that when you go into an area is to settle in early. School started at the end of August in Iowa, and we arrived the 1st of July. It begins at the end of September at Michigan State. We're on the quarter system, and we got there the 1st of August. And that was none too early to get there, because it's very, very important to be settled in, and especially as you begin the first year of a new ministry, to be kind of settled into the area and have a lot of the details of things taken care of, to know which way is north, you know, when you go out on the streets to go somewhere. To go around campus, so when somebody says the Union Building, you don't go, where is that? You know, I mean, it's where you have some familiarity with things, and you know, to have a lot of the basic issues of life taken care of, so that when school begins, you can hit the campus and have some semblance, at least, of knowing what in the world is going on. And one of the things that I've heard two or three people share, and now have experienced personally, both in us going in and starting a couple of ministries and then bringing people on our staff both places. And that is, the first year, anything that happens that first year is gravy. I tell people now when they come on our staff, I say, I'll give you a year to figure out which way is north. So, you know, anything that happens this year, man, praise God and rejoice and carry on. But the second year is when things can really begin to take place. Because it's amazing how much when that second year begins, and, you know, I say to somebody that's on our staff, the second year they're there, you know, you go to Wonders dorm and you know, do this, they know what I'm talking about. You know, I say that to somebody that's on the staff for our first year, and they say, Wonders. Now, let's see. You remember Harrison Street. I remember Harrison Street. Okay, well, and, you know, you just got to go through a lot of stuff like that. And so the first year is really, a lot of times just an orientation year. But settle in early to where that first year you can get the best out of it that you can. Third thing is to pray. And we've heard a lot this week about the importance of prayer. One of my, I would say favorite verses of Scripture, but it's one of those convicting kind of verses. I'm not sure if I'd call it favorite or not, but it's Jeremiah 10:21. And God says, he said, the shepherds are stupid. And I thought, now that's interesting. He's calling the shepherds stupid. Now, why in the world did he do that? And he says, the shepherds are stupid because they do not call upon the Lord. And therefore, they have not prospered, and all their flock is scattered. And God says, you know, man, if you're going to be a shepherd, and you don't call upon the Lord about the things of your own life and the things of the ministry that you're having and so on, you're not going to prosper, and the flock that you're seeking to shepherd is going to scatter. And so it is very, very crucial that as we begin a new BSU ministry, that the thing be bathed in prayer. And a lot of the things that we'd pray for would be geared around that, the vision that God's given us of what we want to see happen, you know, on that campus. And so prayer is an extremely important part of planning a new ministry. And then the fourth thing is to develop a strategy. Somebody has appropriately said, he who aims at nothing hits it every time. And it's true. But there needs to be a strategy. Something that that we know that that we're, how we're going to go about trying to accomplish what it is that God's laid on our heart to accomplish. Developing a strategy. Now, there are five things that I'll just mention and kind of list off here as far as I think are involved in developing a strategy. One is to you need to have clear-cut objectives. If you're going to have a strategy, one of the things that that means is that there needs to be objectives. Know where you're headed. And you know, those objectives need to be, they need to be measurable and they need to be realistic. You know, you need to be able to sit down and look at those later on and see if those were accomplished. And they need to be realistic. You know, I mean, you can have an objective, well, I want to reach the whole campus for the Lord. Well, that's great. That's a nice desire to have. But we need to look at it realistically. You know, what can we really see happen the first year that we're there? Or if you're in another year later on, you know, what do we really want to see happen in the lives of the students that God's given us and the provision of new students and so on? Clear-cut objectives. And then we need to do some strategy in terms of structure. The way in which we structure a ministry is going to have a great deal to do with what the fruit of that ministry will be. And I've been involved in you know, in several different kinds of BSU settings, and I've seen the different results that you get from different kinds of structure. And yeah, the structure will determine a lot of what will take place in your ministry. And you know, there's a lot of a pressure applied in terms of BSU councils and that sort of thing a lot of times. Personally, I found that that particular kind of structure is not the best if you want to really establish a ministry that has evangelism and discipleship as its thrust. Now, some people are using that kind of structure, and they're using it effectively, and that's fine. You know, for me and for a lot of other people that I know that I've talked with, we found that that particular kind of structure doesn't work best for us, because there are some advantages of that kind of structure. There are also some real disadvantages to that kind of structure. And so, you know, basically, life's made up of choosing what kind of problems you want to live with. And, you know, I'd rather live with the kind of problems that arranging some different kind of structures present than I would with the kind of problems that a council approach does, if we're going to have evangelism and discipleship as the thrust of the ministry. And so we're talking about establishing a BSU that would have that as its thrust, where everything fits under that umbrella. If we're evangelism and discipleship are not one of the many things that we do, but everything that we do fits under the umbrella of evangelism and discipleship. But you've got to decide what kind of structure you're going to have. And that should be part of the strategy that you've got. And then you need to think through strategy in terms of program. If these are the objectives and this is the kind of structure we're going to have, then what kind of program things are we going to do? If one of the real objectives is to get people established in the Word, for example, then probably you don't want to bring somebody in, you know, and always talk about, oh, missions. That's a good thing to talk about. And if that's one of your objectives, you know, go for it. But if one of your objectives is to get people established in the Word, then a lot of the program things that you're going to do ought to be centered around, you know, getting people excited about the Word. And but you need to think through and develop a strategy in terms of program and what you're going to do with that program in order to accomplish those objectives. And then you need to deal with relationships. One of the most important things that you can do in BSU ministry is work on relationships. Relationships with, particularly in terms of the university and having a good testimony with them and a good relationship with them. And then relationships with pastors in the area. to where those pastors really understand the things that are on your heart. They understand the vision that you have for what you want to see happen on that campus. And they understand how you're going about doing that. You need to have a strategy of how you're going to build good relationships with the university, good relationships with the pastors in the area where they really will be supportive of you, and good relationships with parents. There are a lot of different areas of relationships, even good relationships with the students, to where when people would hear of BSU, it would be a positive type thing. And so you need to develop some strategy of relationships, particularly in those areas. And then the other thing in terms of strategy is evaluation. You cannot do too much evaluation. That evaluation needs to be, you need to make it a good, clear, hard evaluation, honest evaluation. And you need to look as you evaluate it, what are the things that are really, really crucial in terms of evaluation? Because you see, and the typical thing, is, as we've heard sometimes in the conferences already, one of the typical things that you do is we tend to evaluate based on numbers. Well, dawned on me one day that you can have all kinds of numbers, but then the real issue is not the numbers. The real issue is what's happening in the lives of the numbers that are around. And so we began to think through, what are the things that we really want to see happening in the lives of the people that are around our ministry? And we try to evaluate in light of that. What are those things? We want them to be growing and living a Christ-centered life. We want them to be growing in their time in the Word and their time in prayer. We want them to be effectively sharing Christ with other people. We want them to be really loving and fellowshipping in a meaningful sort of way with one another. I mean, a lot of times what we call fellowship isn't biblical fellowship. You get together and talk about the weather in the football game, and a lot of times we call that fellowship. That's not really biblical fellowship. It's all right to do that. But we haven't had biblical fellowship yet until we're exhorting one another to love and good works and exhorting one another so we won't be hardened by the deceitfulness of sin and bearing one another's burdens. That's the kind of thing that the Bible talks about when it talks about fellowship. And so we want people to be, together in a way where they're having meaningful type fellowship and to where they have a vision of spiritual multiplication. And so we look at what's going on. We look at the people that are around, and we evaluate, rather than how many of them are around, we look at, are those things happening in the lives of the people that are around? But have a strategy of evaluation to where you can look at what's going on and give an honest evaluation of it and continue to strengthen the areas that are strong and discover what the Lord would want you to do to change the areas that are weak. So those are some principles that we found to be really helpful in getting a new ministry going that has evangelism and discipleship as its thrust. Now what I wanted to do, I want Ted to come and just share with you what he did when he went to Madison. And then we're going to take each of those principles and we're going to evaluate, we're going to say, okay, what was Ted's personal vision when he went to Madison, and try to look at some of those things so we can have an actual experience and get some input off of that. Let's see, you're supposed to put this thing on here, Ted, you lucky boy. Wait a minute.
Go for it. Okay, in the summer of 76, my wife and I took a trip. We were working with Brett at the University of Nebraska. We'd been there for 4 years, or 3 years at that point, and that summer we took a trip. We drove through Minnesota and Wisconsin and visited 10 different campuses on kind of a spy out the land trip. And at each campus, we'd stop at the Union. We tried to witness to some students to see what the spiritual climate was like. We wrote down impressions. We tried to find out how many kids were enrolled and what they were majoring in and stuff like that. And to be real honest with you, I really intended to go to someplace like Platteville or River Falls, that had about 5,000 students apiece, and I just nestle in a small community. And going to the University of Wisconsin, there were 43,000 students there when I left. That never had even crossed my mind. And in fact, on this trip, the only reason we went to Madison was because that's where the volunteer state director was, and I just went there to meet him. And in the course of the conversation, he said, "Well, listen, we'd love to have you anywhere you come. But he said, I think we need somebody in Madison. He said, when I read through the New Testament, Paul went to where the people were. And I couldn't get that sentence out of my mind the next year. I went back to Lincoln for one more year. And every time I thought about where I'd like to go, as much as I would have wanted to have gone to Platteville or River Falls or some little place, I kept thinking about what he had said. During that year, campus in Washington State opened up. And the thing that was attractive about that position was it was already an established ministry. They had 150 kids meeting. The salary was fully provided. There was close fellowship 8 miles away at the University of Idaho. And it had all these good things going for it. The only thing that Wisconsin had going for it, there wasn't any salary, there wasn't any ministry, and there was no fellowship. And I thought, God, you know, I'm willing to go wherever you want to go. And, you know, every day, you know, I'd pray, and some days I'd think, no, I want to go to Wisconsin. No, I want to go to Washington. And I was really struggling, and finally I said, God, I need some direction from you. I mean, one thing you need to know wherever you go is when you get there, you're there because that's where God wants you. And if you don't have that, boy, you're not going to stay there very long. And one morning our pastor was preaching, and he used Luke 1:37, and I mean, I haven't had many church services like this. It was like I was the only person in the room. And the angel told Mary, this is impossible for men, but not for God. Now, I can't explain to you how I knew at that point God wanted me to go to Wisconsin, but I know as sure as I'm standing here right now, that's what God was telling me. That see, I knew that God could use Max and Brett and Larry and all these guys because they were a couple of years older than I was, and I had seen God use them. But the question was, could God use me in those situations? And that was the big question. And God said, well, it's impossible with men, but believe it or not, Ted, I can use you. And so I went home that afternoon, and the question was whether or not I was going to believe what God had said. And my wife took a nap, and I went and got in my chair and just started reading through Hebrews. And I got to verse 12 in the third chapter, and it says, we must be careful, therefore, my brethren, that there should not be in any of you that wickedness of heart which refuses to trust and deserts the cause of the living God. Now, at the time, I was teaching school in state prison, and I thought, now, what is wickedness? Well, until I read that verse, I equated wickedness with things that you did to get put in the state prison. And God says, no. He said, if you refuse to believe what I told you this morning, I'm going to chalk it up to your account as wickedness. And so sitting there in my easy chair, I said, God, well, I've got a clear mind right here, you know, and I know what I'm doing. I'm going to choose with my will to go to the University of Wisconsin. And if I get cold feet later and want to back out, don't pay any attention to what I'm saying, because I won't be thinking straight then. I said, right now, though, I know this is what you want me to do. Well, the next evening, Brett came over and he said, I don't know why, but I've just got some verses to share with you. And he just kind of opened the Bible and turned to Romans 4 and just began to preach about Abraham walking by faith. And he got finished and he said, I don't have any idea why God told me to tell you that, but he told me to, and I did. And I told Brett what had happened the day before, and that it was real clear why God had told me that. So the next summer, we moved to Madison. And this isn't an exhaustive list here, but... Oh, let me tell you this. The main reason we moved to Madison, ultimately, I knew that there was students there that we could reach. But ultimately, I felt the issue was, if I had gone to Washington State, there wouldn't have been anything for me to trust God for, because everything would have already been provided. And God said, if you go to Wisconsin, you're going to have to depend on me. And the real reason we went to Wisconsin was because that was where I would get to know God better. And the ministry that was going to come was just going to be kind of a side fruit of that. But I went there with the conviction that I was going to get to know God better as a result. We moved there in July 1st, and Larry already mentioned that you need to get there early enough that you learn where the main streets are and you can register to vote and get your car tags and all that jazz before school starts. And I'd really encourage that. then I would, for that summer, in the morning, I tried to do some personal devotion stuff and pray, but in the afternoons, I made a practice of going over to the campus. And it was kind of funny. There were 20,000 students there in summer school, and everyone talked about how deserted the campus was, but the dorms weren't open or anything. And so I just walked around the dorms on the outside. It was just kind of like marching around the walls of Jericho. And I just prayed. And I just began to ask God, God, when the school starts, I want some Bible studies in these dorms, and you're going to have to help me. And you're going to have to do it. You're not going to help me. You're going to have to do it. So I just made a practice of going over there and praying and learning where the dorms were, and like Larry said, learning the names of the dorms. I didn't want to look like an idiot when school started. I learned where the unions were and where some of the major classroom buildings were. I began to pray for five people, for five students. And I just made five students up in my mind. I said, God, there's probably some kid this summer in Milwaukee that's working over on the docks. And I pray for him today. And I pray that he'd get sick and tired of working on the docks, and that he'd come to Wisconsin hungry for you. And I prayed for a football player. I said, God, Brett had always emphasized working with athletes, so I said, oh, okay, I'll pray for a football player. Well, one of the first students we met was a gymnast. And I think that, you know, it says in Romans 8 that the Holy Spirit intercedes for us. And I think whenever I prayed football player, the Holy Spirit said, he means gymnast. And I just began to pray for five people. And in my mind, and it was, you know, it really kind of gave me a handle on what I was looking for in kids and what I wanted to see happen. And I prayed that God would give us some people to my wife and I. And two verses that have always kind of stood out to me at this point. John 3:27, John the Baptist said, a man can receive nothing unless it is given to him from heaven. And I take that includes people that we work with. And so I began to ask God to give us some people. And Jesus said in John 17:6, I thank thee, Father, for the men whom thou hast given me out of the world. So God gave Jesus people, and I asked him to do the same for us. Another thing I did before school started was I met with area pastors. And the thing I tried to hammer away at this point was give me time. I'm going to do something different. Now, the guy that was the pastor of our church had pastored at a church in Texas where there was a state college that had about 10,000 students, and about 5,000 of them were Southern Baptists. And so they had a going BSU there. And I told him, I said, listen, there aren't 5,000 Southern Baptists on this campus. And what I'm going to do is different from what they were doing in Commerce, Texas. And I want you to give me time. And when I said time, I said, I don't mean 2 months. I'm talking, I want a couple of years. And I said, if you give me a couple of years, there'll begin to be a stream of students come in. But I said, if you want something in the first 2 months I'm here, I said, you're going to be disappointed, and I'm going to feel under a lot of pressure. Now, don't expect them to understand. Just get them to agree that they'll give you time. I went over to the university, and I asked what the policy was on using university facilities for a group. And I found out that the president and the representative of the group had to sign a form. So I had to find somebody to be the president. And so I hustled one of the kids that was in the college department there. I just said, how would you like to be president this year? Fine. So he signed the form. That's about the last official thing he did, but we got recognized by the campus, and we could use the facilities there. And it was a good deal. Madison was so wide open, they'd let anybody use the campus, even Christians. So you can probably go over to the administration building and get a stat sheet and tells you where all the students are coming from and all that, but stat sheets can only do so much, and I didn't even know you could have one until we'd been there for 6 years, so I didn't make any difference with me, I guess. When school started, The first day it started, I was in the dorms. Don't wait till the second week of school, because the longer you wait, the easier it's going to be to start rationalizing why it's safe in your house. And, I went over to the university that first day, and I was shaken. I was scared, man. I was intimidated by the size. I was already lonely, sort of, but I went over there, and I just started claiming the blood of Christ and said, God, I'm going in there to do something you've called us to, and you're just going to have to open some doors. And I just got it as I'd prayed, walking around the dorms, God had impressed me to go to one particular dorm first. And so I went in and just picked the elevator floor at random and just started walking down the hall. And the first open door I came to got to be the first people I shared with. And I told them who I was and what I was doing, and just began to ask if I could share the gospel with them. And a couple of people began to say yes after a little while. And the first thing we did, in addition to that, was I put some signs up. And I think this was one of those gifts from God. I tried this several years, but this was the only year it worked. I just put some signs up in the dorm and said, if you're interested in the dorm Bible study, call this number. And as I was driving home, I thought, what would be the wildest thing that could happen? And the thought just crossed my mind, well, if you got home and Debbie said somebody had already called. And I got home and Debbie said, somebody's already called you about a Bible study. And I thought, man, praise God. And so I called that guy right back up and said, I'm the one that you called about the Bible study. I said, can I come over and meet you? He said, yeah. So I went over there and introduced myself, and I said, do you mind if we have the study in this room? And then anybody that was from that section of campus, I said, okay, we're going to have a study next Wednesday night at 8 o'clock, and I gave them that room number. Now, about 40 people called. About half of them, though, let me just tell you this. See, half of them that called, I didn't tell them who we were or what we were going to be studying about. They just, and as soon as I told them it was Baptist Student Union and we were just starting out, they didn't want anything to do with it. And then there were about 20 people that came to the first study, but only about half of them, they were just there kind of shopping. And, you know, some people want to see what the NAS have, and some people, you know, it's kind of like a buffet line. And the first week or two of school, they just kind of go through and taste what every group's got. And, you know, because I had prayed that God would give us some people, you know, I wasn't disappointed when I never saw these people again. And my first goal there was just to get some isolated Bible studies started. And in corporate America, we're challenged to think big all the time, but if you're starting a ministry, the challenge is to think small. And, you know, Jesus only got 12 people around. And so I wasn't intimidated by the fact that we didn't have more than that. And, you know, and another thing here, too, people were always impressed. I'd say, yeah, there's 37,000 students at Madison, or there were 43 when we left. And they were always impressed that I was at a big campus. But listen, I could have been at a campus at 5,000. I wasn't going to reach any more students than what I reached at that one. I mean, there's only so many people you can touch. You just need to accept that. So I got these initial Bible studies started. And I mean, they were basic. And we talked about assurance and starting a devotional time. And what I tried to do was look during the study to see who was paying attention. I tried to see who had already done the Bible studies. I gave them these little books and told them, if you take 15 minutes, you can have this done when we come back next week. And I tried to look around, kind of casually, as the Bible study was going on. You can always tell who hadn't done it because they always held their like that. But, I tried to figure out who was interested. And who asked the questions in the Bible study? I mean, there were some people that were there and they'd take notes or they'd fill in the blanks as we went along. But the people that were interested in asking questions, when the Bible study was over, I kind of tried to time leaving when they were leaving the dorm, when they were leaving that room. And then as we walked down the hall together, I'd say, hey, how about a Coke on Thursday? Or, when could I get together with you sometime? And God began to show me over a couple of weeks' time who was interested. And I just began to meet with them. And the first thing I'd do with people is I'd just share the wheel illustration with them. And at the end, I'd have them draw out how long their spokes were. And if prayer was their short spoke, they didn't know it, but they just kind of set the curriculum for what we were going to talk about the next 3 or 4 weeks. I'd talk to them about intercessory prayer. I'd talk to them about praying for the lost, praying for saved, thanksgiving, praise, and then whatever the second shortest spoke was, that was the curriculum for the couple of weeks after that. And I didn't pressure these people right off the bat. As I was walking down the hall with them for the first time, hey, how would you like to get together for an hour a week for the rest of the year? I didn't do that. I just asked them if we could get together for a Coke. And when we got together, I'd ask them how their classes were going. I'd ask them, just try and get other things from them. But I always went with my gun loaded on a topic. And sooner or later, when we'd finish talking about the football game or whatever, I'd eventually get my gun out and try and cover a topic with them. And I wanted them to get the idea that when they were around me, we could talk about fun things, but ultimately we were going to talk about God and His kingdom. And I tried to do different things with guys, and I started jogging with one fella. And one week we were jogging, and about midway through the run, we talked about a bunch of things. And I said, "Well, John, where are you in the Word this week?" And as soon as I said that, he started to kind of chuckle. And I knew why he was chuckling. So I said, "John, you may have figured out that every week when we get together, I ask you where you are in the Word." And he laughed, and he said, "Yeah, I've kind of noticed that." I said, "Well, John, if you haven't figured out by now, that's because I think getting in the Word is important." And he said, "Yeah, I kind of picked that up." And I wanted them to know that, that's what I stood for. And that's, we could talk about a lot of things, but ultimately we were going to talk about Christ and how to win other people. And that first year, the BSU was basically non-existent. It existed as isolated Bible studies. And kids would ask me, well, what do you do the rest of the week? You're just here you're here during the day sometimes, and you're here on Tuesday night to lead the study, and sometimes you come over on Thursday. What are you doing the rest of the time? I said, "Well, I lead a study on the other side of the campus on Wednesday night." Oh, so they knew that other things were going on. And so then about midway through the year, I finally said, "Well, hey, why don't we all meet over at my house this week? And you can meet the kids over in Lakeshore dorms, and I've told them about you all, and they think you're a figment of my imagination. Why don't you show up and prove them wrong, And so they did that, and we just came over and just had a party. We played charades and stuff like that. And then I had one of the guys from our little covey of BSUs come up and just share for a few minutes on a topic when we were done. And the rest of that year, we just had like a once-a-month social. And the next year, and two, on these studies, that year, I led all of the studies myself. And I didn't try and cultivate leaders or anything at that point, but other Bible study leaders. I was just watching their response and trying to build the relationships. And at the end of the first year, we had three kids that were with us. And one of them moved. And but the next year, during registration week, I got those other two kids together. And I asked them to come over to my house one night. There was a guy and a gal. And I said, "Listen, I want to form a team." And I said, "And I want you guys to be on it." And I kind of, I really laid the challenge out. I said, "Now I'm going to ask you for 13 hours a week of your time. And that includes church, that includes a quiet time, that includes some Bible study, but it includes coming over here and spending some time with Debbie and I. I'll teach you how to do some Bible studies." And I said, "The main thing I want to do, I want to train you to lead some Bible studies on this campus." And they both said, "Okay." And so that year, for the second year, I led all the Bible studies too. but I was training them. And during the week, as I got with them, we'd talk about whatever they wanted to talk about, and then I'd pull my gun out and talk about something. And then we'd talk about the Bible study that was going to happen the next week. And then about midway through the year, every once in a while I'd say, well, Pete, I can't be there this week. I've got something to do. You'll have to lead the Bible study. You know, and he was scared, but we'd pray, and, you know, I'd give him a list of questions. I said, now, you know, this is what you're going to talk about now. Just try and think back, you know, when you were a new student, what would you have thought about this topic? And so he tried to come up with a list of questions that he thought people would have. And generally, those are the same questions that would get asked again. I'd say, okay, now what scriptures are you going to use when those questions come up? And so I tried to have him prepared. And I said, you know, if they ask you some off-the-wall question, just tell them King's X, you'll answer it next week. And so that year, I trained them. The next year, I said, okay, now you guys get to lead Bible studies this year, but you can't lead one until you find somebody to be your assistant. And so that kind of put the pressure on them to find somebody. But each of them found somebody. Well, by the fifth year we were there, we had 13 Bible studies going, and I was only leading one of them. And all of the other studies had students that we had raised up, and all of them had an assistant that were that they were being trained in how to do it. And they were meeting with their assistant during the week. And I would tell them, okay, now, you know, and I'd try and help them think through with their assistant what they could do. So, but now, that took 5 years to get it to that point. So, in Wisconsin, in 7 years that we were there, I only met three kids that were Southern Baptists when we met them. So, we had to spend a lot of time in evangelism. And I'll just say this real quick, too. We met a lot of kids that had come out of bad church backgrounds, and they were real hungry to grow spiritually, but they didn't want anything to do with church. And at first, the first guy, I really tried to pressure him into coming to church. And he basically just told me, whoa, you know, he said, you know, I'll get with you and we'll talk about Jesus, but I don't want to have anything to do with the church. And finally, I just said, okay. And I began to see that in a lot of ways that was a stage that people go through, especially if they've come from a bad church background, that they know they need Jesus. And so they're willing to let you talk to them about Jesus. But they don't think they need church because all they've got is bad memories of it. But after a couple of months, I just dropped it. But after a couple of months, he asked me, he said, now where is it you go to church again? And I told him. He said, well, I may want to go with you sometime. I said, okay. What time are you going to come by and pick me up? You know, so, you know, and as soon as that, the first generation of students, as soon as they began to go to church, I quit talking about church almost altogether. And they became the best salesmen for church that we had. Because other kids would say, well, I don't want to go to church. And they'd say, hey, I know just how you feel. You know, they expected me to talk about church because they thought somewhere that was where my salary was coming from. And, you know, I was just the salesman. But these kids were satisfied customers. And so they thought, well, you know, they haven't got anything to gain by me going to church. Nobody's paying their roads, their hall. So the second generation of students started coming to church almost immediately. And so we had a big influx of students come into the church almost overnight after a long period of time. But it kind of... that made my pastor real happy. You know, and he didn't understand where they were coming from, but all of a sudden he knew that he had five kids that wanted to be baptized, and, you know, he could have cared less where they came from, you know. So, let's see, what else? One thing, too, when you're getting started with these people that are kind of shopping around, you need to realize that not everybody has the mentality or has the desire to be in a group that's just getting started. I think that that kind of calls for a special breed of kid. And there were people that joined our group when we had 40 that wouldn't have joined it when there were just six of us. And two, this is another thing you need to do, is just die to numbers. I remember one time Brett came up and he said, let's get everybody together. This was at the very beginning of our second year. And so, boy, for a month, I beat the drum. Brett Yon's coming to town, you know, and I threw dust in the air and, you know, did everything. I was so proud I could have just bust my buttons, you know. And Brett said, man, that was a good group. He said, you need to have something every month. I said, wow, you mean we're ready for something once a month? And he said, yeah. I said, boy, okay. So as soon as Brett left town, boy, I started beating the drum for next month, you know, and I'm going to be the speaker. And I was going to talk on lordship, and I had a gal that was going to sing a special and another girl that was going to give her testimony. And that afternoon, I was slaving away. This was going to be the best message on lordship they'd ever heard, you know. And I was sitting there doing this, and all of a sudden, the thought crossed my mind, what would be the worst possible thing that could happen tonight? And I thought, if four of us showed up. And then I thought, no, that wouldn't be so bad, because Pete and Lisa and Ruby and me all know we're just starting. And I could just use it to encourage us. And, you know, I said, the really humiliating thing would be if there were about six or seven of us and three of them were brand new and didn't know, have any idea what was going on, and they'd wonder, what kind of group is this? And then the second thought crossed my mind, God, you wouldn't do that, would you? And right then, I just kind of made peace with it. I said, God, I don't care if there's six or 600. You know, I'm going to do the same thing regardless of how many numbers are there. And boy, right then, I just, you know, put this crowd on the altar and just went, you know, killed it. And it's a good thing I did, because about an hour before I left to go to campus, my key guy called up and said, Ted, I feel terrible. I won't be there tonight. I thought, Pete, I don't care if you've got typhoid. You know, you need to be there tonight, you know. I said, but I bit my tongue, and I said, okay, you know. You know, so I said, God, you know, I've committed this to you. So we got there, and there were six of us, and three of them had never been there before. Lisa sang, and Ruby gave her testimony, and I preached on lordship, and I never saw those other three people again. But that was okay, because I'd made peace with that. And I didn't spend the next 3 months worrying, you know, gosh, boy, we should have made a better impression or something like that. And I had a freedom because God had given me a release from that. And, you know, one thing that was helpful too, Brett and Larry and Jack and Bob, you know, when I talked to them, you know, they didn't talk to me about, you know, well, how many did you have last week or anything like that. And they gave me the freedom to fail. And that was comforting. I didn't want to fail, you know, but I had that freedom. Let's see. The one other thing I got listed here is I tried to find some like-hearted fellowship. And a fellow by the name of Jim Tanner was with Crusade and moved into town almost the same day I did. And Chuck Broughton moved in with Navigators. And he moved into town about a month after I did. And I began to get with those guys, and Chuck referred to me as the undercover nav agent on campus, and I'd sit in on their staff meetings sometime. And I just needed somebody that was like-hearted, because I wasn't going to get it at church, and I just needed to have somebody that I could talk to and understand. And so I'd pray for that just as much, because I got a lot of encouragement from those two guys. And God really used their encouragement a lot of days when I began to wonder, you know, man, what am I doing up here? And, you know, they were able to hold my feet to the fire. So.
That sounds like a true one.
Yeah.
Okay. Thanks, Ted. Max is going to crank down in there one of these days. It means how we're running late. It's probably going to be fairly soon. So I'll tell you what we're going to do. Instead of evaluating Ted, before we do that, if you have any questions, let's field those, because we want to deal with maybe where you've got some questions, and all of us can kind of team up together and work on that. And if nobody has any questions, we'll evaluate Ted. But do you have any questions that you would want to ask or talk about? Now, we have some ground rules with questions. The ground rules are that if you have a question, you don't raise your hand. Now, you can do that if you want to. But if you do, it won't do you any good because I won't see it. And your arm will get mighty tired before you... So just say, hey, Larry, or just speak up or whatever. But, yeah. Yes.
I'd like to ask both of you...
You better get back up here, Ted. About 102%. I'll repeat the question for Aristotle in the tape too. Ralph is asking, what part does evangelism play in the early stages of beginning a new ministry? And it's an extremely important role, particularly when you're in an area where you don't hang a placard out that says Baptist Student Union and 200 people say, oh boy, you're finally here. And you know, that doesn't happen in most places where you're going to be starting a new BSU work. And so, you know, what we had to do at Michigan State when we went and found our BSU president on admitting he had a -2 interest in spiritual things, you know, and he was the only one in the whole BSU, was BSU president by default. And so we just went into the dorms and just went and, like what Ted was sharing, you know, we just walked around and found some open doors and introduced ourselves and began to share the gospel. And you know, as we'd find open people that were willing to talk and so on, we'd start spending time with them and that sort of thing. And that's what you have got to do. I mean, you've got to spend, you know, just hours upon hours just meeting students and, you know, and finding people that are interested and be willing to spend a lot of time with them and not have a lot of expectations for a while. You know, we had the access to names of Baptist students, Baptist preference students, and we used those. We'd go around and meet them, and quite frankly, usually their roommates were more interested than they were, and so on. But that gave us an excuse to kind of go in the dorms with a sense of purpose. You know, we had this list of people to contact. And, you know, God was gracious. I mean, I couldn't believe it. And this is one of those stories like Ted had that happened once. You know, the first year we were there, we go walking in and meet this freshman girl, had her name, you know, as a Baptist preference student. And so we shared with her what we were doing and so on. And she said, you know, this is really neat. This is answered prayer. And I kind of set up a little bit, you know. And she said, I didn't know what I was going to do when I got here. And she said, I prayed before I came and said, God, give me something to do when I get to Michigan State. And I thought, this is not your average cat freshman, you know. And you know, she put together a gal's Bible study, you know, herself. And Joanne led it and so on. But you will spend multitudes of hours in evangelism, and you just might as well plan on it, because that's going to be the nucleus of what will build your ministry.
One thing I found was we did...
Make Charlie and Happy talk to the tape.
We had more evangelistic Bible studies after the ministry got started. When the ministry was just starting, it was mostly just one-on-one gospel presentations. I mean, it was hard to get an evangelistic Bible study started when we were just getting started. But after we got to know some students and could relate to their non-Christian friends, it was a whole lot easier to come up with a list of non-Christians who were interested in evangelistic studies. So, at the first, most of my evangelism was just one-on-one. You know, I mean, I learned all different kinds of ways to share the gospel. I mean, like Leroy, you know, basically I knew the bridge and testimony, you know, but like Leroy said about Dan Green, who did the arrow illustration, boy, I learned that. And, you know, I went back and reviewed Paul Little's list of spiritual questions to get conversations started. And really just ask God for a sense of creativity and how to share the gospel with people. So that was, evangelistic Bible studies as such didn't really come about until a lot later in our ministry.
Mm-hmm. Okay. One thing that you may want to do too is learn to, there you go. We don't keep
somebody
Charlie. Oh, keep Charlie in on your good side. You'll learn to use your home a lot in the ministry too. I think that's true anywhere, but that's an important thing. Students really enjoy coming to your home, and that can be a tremendous opportunity to build relationships and really win their hearts. You may have to work. We kept inviting people over, and they didn't want to come because they were a little unsure as to who we were and that sort of thing, so it may take a while to build a relationship where they'll do that. That's an important thing to do. Somebody had a question.
Yeah, I'm sorry I raised my hand.
No, that's okay. That's Ted's here to help, so we're all right.
I have a question because I feel like my application is a little different, and I want to ask you to maybe even expand on some of the things you've met that you share, and maybe some of the principles that you learned at this conference in Michigan State, even in leadership development after Bible studies. I'm at a campus in California that the average student probably stays there only 2 years. The dormitories are only 900 out of 20-some-odd thousand students. We have small dorms, mostly commuters. And there's no guarantee they come back. You may only have them for a year, and a lot of times you might have them in the dorms and the next year they're gone. How would you start there, and then how would you develop your leaders, and maybe you could shift those into principles that we could apply? Maybe that's a big question.
Yeah, that's a difficult one. The question is on a, let me repeat it for two reasons. One's a tape, and two, see if I understand your question. You're on a campus that is mainly commuter, and students are there maybe as little as 1 year. And how do you take a situation like that and develop a ministry and do some leadership training? Is that the essence of it? That's a good question. And if you find out the answer, you write a book and you'll make a million. Commuter campuses are extremely difficult situations. We have, in addition to Michigan State with 42,000 students, we also have Lansing Community College with another 22,000 students in the Lansing area. And that's exactly the same situation. There are no dormitories. They'll run over 40,000 students through in a year, but it's 20,000 a term. And, half of those will drop out, and another 10,000 will come in. And then, the next term, half of those drop out, and another 10,000 come in. It's amazing. And then what happens is that, they come, they go to class, and then they go home or they go to work, and, they just scatter to the four winds. And what we find in our experience has been that some terms we can have a ministry out there and some terms we haven't, just kind of depending on who's around and who's available. And we have got two students that are key students in our ministry now that came out of Lansing Community College. And what we did with that was, just got them in a Bible study and then began to spend a lot of one-on-one time with them. And then in terms of ministry, a lot of times what we would try to do is develop the contacts that they had. A lot of times those people's contacts are not on campus. They're friends that they graduated from high school with, friends in their neighborhood, that sort of thing. And so we, rather than trying to get them necessarily reaching other students that were going to Lansing Community College, we try to begin get them ministering to their circle of friends, whoever they might be, and put together Bible studies that way that might not even meet at Lansing Community College. You know, I meet somewhere else.
I think you just got to think in terms of your overall objective, too, at that point, because at Wisconsin, we tried to structure things where, I counted on having somebody 4 or 5 years. And so I had an entirely different set of objectives because I knew I was going to have longer to do it. And, when we went there, I targeted freshmen. And I thought, I'd take anybody that came, but, I wanted to have something to build on. I only wanted to start the ministry once if I could help it, And so we went after freshmen, and we picked up some sophomores, too. But that gave us a nucleus of kids that were going to be around for 4 or 5 years. And that was helpful. And I purposefully went to where the dorms where most freshmen lived. Because at Wisconsin, it was required that, your first year, you had to live in the dorms if you were a freshman. So that was something we did on purpose.
I don't know if that helps or not, but that is a difficult question. I mean, everybody has seminars on that, trying to get help with it, because it's a very difficult situation. But I would reiterate what Ted was saying about freshmen. Really, in BSU, we're not a whole lot different than the football team. If the football team doesn't have a good recruiting year of freshmen every year, then they're going to pay the price for that in a couple of years. And, BSU is really no different.
One thing we did was you could stay in the dorms as long as you wanted. And we tried to encourage kids to stay in the dorms and so they could have a ministry the next year. And all these freshmen that didn't know where anything was, these kids could help them learn the ropes, and then also that gave us an avenue to minister to them on a different level the next year. So,
and they get a lot of opportunities to witness that way. I mean, we had these, I mentioned the other night, these guys, three guys that we had that purposefully picked the dorm on campus that had the largest number of freshmen living in it and lived there. Well, I'll tell you, they got multitudes of questions. You guys are seniors? What are you doing living in this dorm, as a senior? Well, I mean, everybody on the floor pretty new, pretty quickly, they understood, who these guys were and, what they were doing there and that kind of thing. And it really gave a natural setup of identifying with the Lord and kind of getting some spiritual conversations going.